Yes, we're here thanks to Brighton's Lawyers, protecting your future. Phone Brighton's 1800 848 848. It is Brighton's Lawyers. Right now it's 10:45. Stephen Cull is with us in the studio from Brighton's Lawyers, and he joins us. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning, Stuart.
Thank you for your time. Now, if you've got a question for Stephen, whether it's wills, neighbourhood disputes, you name it, we'll get to your calls on 13 13 32. I noticed this morning the Federal Police are saying they still plan to make a further statement on the events that led to the arrests of Dabali and Nine, but they're saying they'll wait out of respect for the families of Andrew Chan and Myron Sukumaran. This has been a difficult one, isn't it, that the suggestion that they may have tipped off the Indonesian authorities and therefore exposed Australians to the death penalty, even though officially our government line is that we're opposed to the death penalty.
Well, that's right, Stuart, and I think it's interesting to see that they've actually changed their procedures on the back of this case.
Right.
And whether that's an admission that perhaps they didn't give it the thought that they should have, we'll wait and see what the statement has to say, I guess.
I mean, you have to wonder as well, we're at the height of terrorism, Jamar Islamia and everything else. I think there's no doubt that the Federal Police were very keen to get as much information as they could get from the Indonesians, and whether they felt this was a token offering on their behalf as a bit of a square up, it's difficult to know, isn't it? Because they were different times back then.
Well, that's right. But look, I guess their primary concern would be that there was an illegal action taking place. One would think perhaps people at the lower levels don't think through the full consequences of handing these people over to the Indonesian police and the Indonesian system. I'm guessing that they could have nabbed these people coming into Australia with the drugs. But look, I guess they've changed their policy, changed their procedures on the back of this. To my mind, that's some sort of indication that perhaps they didn't give it the full thought that they perhaps deserve to give it.
And what broadly are the changes they've made now to put some safeguards into place there?
Well, look, I think there's more consideration as to potential penalty,
right?
When they're dealing with these matters, whether they could take some different action and engage themselves in capturing the wrongdoers. That's probably the area where they're going to change things, I would think.
Okay. Now, in this case, one of the boy's fathers contacted a lawyer. In a situation like that, if someone came to you and said, oh, look, this is the scenario I'm dealing with, would you be phoning the police or you'd try and deal with it differently?
Look, I hope I'm never put in that position. But look, I would be encouraging the father to, make contact with the child and try and talk some sense. Obviously, this has given great exposure to the risks and dangers associated with this sort of conduct and with the most tragic of consequences.
They are law enforcement bodies, and I suppose it's very difficult to expect, they might hold someone's hand when ordinarily they're in the business of arresting people who do the wrong thing.
Oh, that's right. And I guess it's a balancing act, particularly when you're dealing with international operations and crimes, and obviously the impact that these crimes have on the domestic populace is quite significant as well. So there really is a balancing act that has to be taken there, and I'd hate to be making those decisions myself.
Now, the issue of rehabilitation, it's come up consistently. I think there's no doubt in the world that, they had reformed their ways. There's no question about that. Is that so relevant in countries where the death penalty does apply and they're on death row? Is rehabilitation going to count for anything when you consider they don't expect they're ever going to be released, that rehabilitation would only be relevant where you thought you were going to release someone in the future?
Well, look, Stuart, I think what we're dealing with is a presidential power to issue a pardon.
Yes.
I would think that a pardon should be considered on all relevant factors. Obviously, it's not written into their judicial code to take those sorts of things into account. But when you're dealing with a presidential pardon, which is a option that the president can exercise, he should be looking at all the possible benefits. These two fellows were reportedly doing a lot of good in the Indonesian prison system.
Yes.
And in that regard, it would have benefited arguably his community
to have left them in the prison and continue the work they were doing,
and continue on with their good work.
Yeah.
Putting an end to their lives has brought and into that work, and also, of course, a lot of international repercussions as well.
We've seen overnight one of the people who was due to face the firing squad was this Filipino maid. Now, she's evidently made some admissions and given them other information about the kingpin, and as a result of that, got a last-minute reprieve. Now, I don't know whether they were ever given the option in this case to identify other people, but for whatever reason, it seems that they didn't.
Well, that's right, and I'm not familiar with what goes on in the background, obviously, but those sorts of things are part of the incentive to keep people about and alive, and you know, if they have rehabilitated themselves and improved themselves, keep them in the prison system and continue on with their good work.
What's incredible as well, that we were talking about it, the last person to be put to death in Australia was Ronald Ryan, which was back in the late 60s. But evidently, the actual sentence of the death penalty, it remained on our statute books until the mid-80s.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And for quite some time with the last president, there was a moratorium on the death penalty.
Yes.
And I think this current president put himself in a bit of a bind by coming out strongly in the domestic front as a big campaigner
strong
for law
man.
And order,
and
made these statements to say, well, look, these people are going to be put to death, without perhaps, again, realising the ramifications on the international and diplomatic front.
No, that's right. He'd set himself on a course, and that was it. He's almost a sort of a wannabe Vladimir Putin in some respects, isn't he, this bloke, Widodo?
Well, I hope not, but
that's, I said, wannabe. Yeah, he's heading down
right.
that path.
That's right.
Now, the other story of some attention this week, this Scott McIntyre, not somebody I'd heard of, but a sports presenter at SBS. Now, he's been sacked after making a series of tweets on Anzac Day, on the night of Anzac Day, that were quite derogatory. Now, plenty of people have come out and said, well, look, this was a matter of free speech. He shouldn't have been sacked over it. Others are saying, well, look, it wasn't the free speech. It's that media outlets and many other companies now have very firm policies when it comes to social media use, and he breached those and he was sacked for that. What is the standing as this applies now, and you know, could he be taking or considering legal action over his dumping?
Look, he might be, but I guess employers have a right to protect their brand, that they spend a lot of money in marketing and those sorts of things. He's on Twitter identifying himself as a representative of SBS, albeit a sports reporter. He's got the followers on Twitter on the back of that, because I think he had 30,000 followers. If he's just typical Joe Citizen, I think I've got about 10 followers
on my
Twitter.
Yeah.
But,
well, I'm not on it.
No. Well, that's why I've only got 10 followers, I think.
That's true. You'd have 11 if I was on it. That's right. I guarantee you I'd be following it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're saying in part the number of followers he's got is by virtue of what job he does, and that links directly back to his association with SBS.
Exactly right. And the fact he's holding himself out there as an employee of SBS and coming out with these statements, it connects the statements to the employer. In those circumstances, I think an employer would be right to say, look, we cannot tolerate this. You've made these comments. They might be your personal views. You haven't identified them as your personal views.
Yes.
It's just gone out and tweeted them. And in those circumstances, the potential damage if the employer takes no action is quite significant, I would think.
Is it relevant, though? I mean, you could argue that most fair-minded people looking at it would say, well, these were obviously, he's tweeting them, they're his personal views, they're not the views of SBS more broadly. Can you not come to that conclusion, or it doesn't really cut it in these things?
Well, look, It's created controversy. If SBS just lets it go through to the keeper, I guess the allegation could be made that, well, they didn't take action, they haven't suspended him, they're endorsing the comments or condoning them. So I guess in circumstances where an individual makes some comments which are potentially damaging to the employer, I think it's fair enough for the employer to put off the employee.
And most of the policies around this sort of social media use now, they're pretty hard and fast, are they?
Look, it's not just social media. I think there was a case in Fair Work just recently where an employee sent a text. She thought she was sending it to her brother who was doing some carpentry work in the workplace, calling the boss a complete dick.
Right.
And unfortunately, she sent the text.